an absolute pleasure to welcome back for one of our occasional visits from the Hong Kong Visa Geezer, Steve Barnes. How are you doing?
Hello, Phil.
You look like a country gentleman today.
He's got his tweed on. And tongue.
Good to see you. Well, basically, as you know, Steve's been coming for several years every now and again, and it's pretty the same things, really, but they're the same problems that people have, aren't they?
Well, that's the thing about immigration, right? It's people and their life activity, and when you come to Hong Kong, at least for the first 7 years, you're going to have some dealings with the immigration department. That's the way it works.
So. You certainly are. So if you've just come here, I'll tell you what, if people have just come here, or we do dependent stuff, don't we? If you want your partner to be able to work, drop us a line, morningbrew@rthk.hk. I'm pretty sure it'll be a dead easy ask for Steve, won't it? You must get this all the time.
Well, there are certain themes, right, that present themselves in immigration. And one of the joys and beauties of being an immigration practitioner is that everybody's individual circumstances are different. So they've all got stories. And whilst you can have a clear understanding of policy and procedure and the law that apply to certain circumstances, the actual determination of how those individual circumstances fit into, you know, policy and procedure and law make it quite interesting because it's all different.
All right, Steve. Well, here's the deal. We're in a real political hot potato right now in Hong Kong for many, many reasons. And I'm wondering if you could just give us a general overview on, are you getting, it's not, I don't want to say, are you getting more or less clients, but are you getting busier because of perhaps things that are going on around town? They're getting more picky. That's what I'm asking you, the government.
I think we've talked about this in the past. Certainly in terms of business investment visas, that is entrepreneurs that are coming to Hong Kong to start new businesses or joining existing businesses, definitely the Immigration Department have got higher expectations of the applicants.
Now, you mean? I'm talking in light of what's going down.
Now. But more generally stated, I don't think so. I don't see any particular trends that suggest the Immigration Department are making it more difficult to ultimately get approved. Certainly, the Immigration Department, as a population has increased, have had to.
Yeah, that's true. Actually,
they've had to increase certain angles of control because they've only got certain resources, and the way that the Immigration Department typically police the foreign national community here is by ensuring that people stay in compliance, and when they come up for renewal, they'll have a look at to see what's been going on in their lives in the previous period of time to ensure that they remain in compliance. So that presents itself in greater documentary challenges, say. Things can take a little bit longer, but insofar as people who are worthy of a positive result, they get a positive result. Mm. Maybe you have to sweat a little bit more to get it because of control mechanisms.
It could be worse. You could be after a British passport. I mean, look at that scene.
took me 4.5 months to renew mine. Ridiculous.
I'm taking you off the job here in a way, Steve, but you're a British citizen as well.
Well, thank goodness I had an Australian passport, so
exactly.
I could travel. I didn't get stuck.
Know,
but poor people who didn't have that option available to them. Shocking.
You know, when the guys here could do passports, it was actually a breeze.
Yeah. People give the Hong Kong Immigration Department a hard time, but you know, when you think about that kind of nonsense,
that situation,
we're brilliant. We're, you know, they're rock stars, right?
Yeah. One more thing about the department itself, right? So, you know, you're talking about this increased population, over 7 million now.
Yeah, and all the visitors,
I'm on about. It's no secret that a high proportion, for whatever reason they're here, are from the mainland. So does that mean that the department here has had to sort of open new departments to deal with their special issues?
Well, I think they reallocate resources, yeah, for sure. They'd need to be able to keep up. But opening the floodgates to mainlanders that can come for 7 days visa-free has had, you know, well-stated impact on the society here, right, and to know what that's all about. But in terms of other aspects, I don't think we've seen too much negative implications as a result of all of that, other than the fact control significantly means that documentation needs to be tighter, things take a bit longer, the requirements of applicants are that much greater. But as I say, if you're worthy of the result, you get the result, what may.
The big beef on that one is it's the guys on the mainland who decide who can come through into Hong Kong, isn't it? It takes the power away from the fellas here.
Yeah, and there's also, if you're a mainlander coming to live in Hong Kong, there's an extra dimension to the immigration application. You've got the Hong Kong piece, but there's also a piece that needs to happen back in China as well, usually at the Public Security Bureau, because if you're a mainlander resident on the mainland and you get a dependent visa, for example, or an employment visa, or you come here under the Quality Migrant Admission Scheme, because we have have a boundary between our jurisdictions, not a border. The mainlanders don't use passports to get their residence visas endorsed therein. They come on what's known as an entry-exit permit.
All right.
It's a special sort of internal passport that allows you to travel between China and Hong Kong.
Mm.
But once you get the approval notification from the Immigration Department here, the mainland resident needs to get their internal passport, so to speak, the entry-exit permit, endorsed with the ability to come and live in Hong Kong, and that's another immigration challenge that they face. It tends to be administration on the Chinese side, but it's one extra step that they have to complete.
All right, then. Something else I wanted to ask you about. Our morning show guys, certainly in the past few days, have been featuring blokes who are doing startup companies, whatever they might be.
Yeah.
It just got me thinking, you know, I don't know whether they've moved here to do it, whether they're doing it, from, you know, whether they're all sorted already and they've got an arm here.
Yeah.
The startup scene, where does that involve you?
Well, if you're a foreign national, or indeed you're an existing resident that's here on an employment visa, and you decide that you want to start a business in Hong Kong, then you need to get the Immigration Department's permission to do that.
Mm.
And that's reflected in a business investment visa application. You have to show that you can make a substantial contribution to the economy of Hong Kong. That's the test for approval.
In theory.
In practice as well, in actual fact. And that process normally takes 4 to 6 months to play itself out, but the Immigration Department are looking for certain sort of themes to be present so they can be satisfied that that approvability test can be passed. And that
Do you do quite a few of these?
Oh, it's 50% of our practice. It's a huge amount of our
work. Reason I ask you that is not to be nosy, it's to ask you what general areas are these guys in? Are they tech fellas? Are they IT fellas in general?
Well, yeah, I mean, because we're kind of moving from an industrial economy to a connection economy now, which necessarily means it's all about technology.
Yeah.
So all the so-called startups that find themselves here are increasingly involved to one degree or another in technology. So, people have got coding skills, people have got a really good command of a particular niche and realise that they
That's
can creatively
about,
disrupt that, you know, the incumbent arrangements through the strategic use or deployment of new technology. A lot of the startup, really, I'd say 90% of the startup action involve people that are going to be using technology in a new and creative way, and they see an opportunity in Hong Kong for all the classic reasons. I mean, Hong Kong being great for business and, you know, easy accessible, very simple to establish relationships and all the rest of that good stuff. We don't have a huge pool of coding talent, although it seems to be getting a little bit better. So it means a lot of these skills have to be brought in. So the Immigration Department will consider applications from startups that are owned by foreigners for visas for the owners themselves, but also increasingly for foreign national talent to come in and do the coding work.
Mm.
The problem is this, right? That, you know, the test for approval substantial contribution to the economy of Hong Kong for the last 25, 30 years has been satisfied in a particular way. Creation of local jobs, properly set up offices, resources, that's cash and other kind of resources that are normally present that are driving you to make the investment decision in the first place. But in the startup ethos, normally what you do is you don't have a real clear idea of what your market is all about
right.
and what your final product might look like. So you can't pass the test for approval in the classic sense because you don't know where you're going to be 6 to 12 months down the road.
That's true.
And most startups, 2 years from hence, are sort of they've crashed and burned, they're gone. The Immigration Department struggle with the whole concept of startups yet. But I know that InvestHK are doing some good work in this regard. They're trying to educate the Immigration Department to the sort of reality of the startup scene. And in fairness, the Immigration Department, whilst they do struggle, in my experience, with these new so-called business models, they are increasingly being a little bit more relaxed in terms of the qualifications required especially of younger technicians who have sort of hacked their way to a really competent skill set, but never graduated from universities. So don't form the normal profile of a professional under the general employment policy, which is with the policy which governs who gets employment visas and who doesn't.
Yeah.
But if you can show that you've got something very, very special about you, very, very unique, and Hong Kong is going to be tangibly benefited as a result of your deployment of your skills in Hong Kong, even though you're not a typical professional, so to speak, then then the immigration department will come to the party. And I've seen a couple of examples of that in the last 3 or 4 months where normally they wouldn't have gotten approved. Say a year ago, perhaps couldn't expect approval, but
so
we've
give
had
it
approval.
A go. You're saying
do it right, tell your story properly. Don't just go with this, you know, background. Well, I like to take apart digital watches, and I've done it all my life, and I think I'll be a really good coder. Can I have a visa, please? That's not going to work. You need to have something a bit more profound, peer recognition and the like. But yeah, if you're not a classic professional in the tech space, I'm seeing the immigration department being more and more flexible about that. And, you know, kudos to them for that.
That's very interesting. Opportunity is the name of the game. You've described in the past minute there two kinds of opportunity, which really much interests me. You talk about creatively disrupt, and in a previous sentence you talked about niche. Now, disruptive technology, to my knowledge, means something that comes along and slams what already exists into change. Digital photography took Kodak to the cleaners. But the other one you're talking about, see, that's aggressive. And the other one you're talking about, there is niche. Oh, there's a hole between A and C. Let's be B. Two different things.
Well, you just give me a great opportunity to talk about, you know, my entire mission in life, and I appreciate this, Phil.
Feel free.
You know, if you understand the way that we carry out our business, you know, we basically publish on Hong Kong immigration space, right? And we publish every single day. And we publish with a desire to answer people's questions and to help them solve their problems without any expectation of return. Now, traditionally in our business, immigration consultants guarded their knowledge, they guarded their know-how. It was a case of, if you want access to my expertise, you have to pay me for it, right? But you know, when you've got almost free use of technology through the internet these days, WordPress and the like, if you can showcase your knowledge and you fill a void, a vacuum of information, where there's been a vacuum of information by putting your stuff out there into a particular niche,
giving them something,
answering questions and solving problems as we do, then effectively the people who have those problems, they begin to organize themselves around you and your websites, because they can't get that information anywhere else.
Yeah.
And in that process, what you do is you create relationships with these people, directly or indirectly.
Are you a disruptive media then, in your business?
I think we are. I think we are, for sure. I mean, our niche is Hong Kong immigration, and we use free content, high-quality content, in an interesting way to help people answer their questions and solve their problems.
It sounds like such an aggressive word, but people always talk about disruptive technology. I mean, the iPhone is disruptive technology, or it was when it came out.
It's just doing it a different way, right?
That's right. Yeah. But it's preventing others from flexing their muscles. You're doing a paradigm on the direction.
Well, remember, I started the world. I was a co-founder of the world's second largest immigration practice, and I was intrinsically involved in the world's largest corporate immigration practice for a period of about 12 years altogether.
Okay.
And I know how they operate, and I know their strengths, and I know their weaknesses. And I'm a small fry, really, in the grand scheme of things when you think about the sizes of these organizations. But what they don't do is they don't give their information away in the way that we do for free, and they don't position themselves to answer people's questions and solve their problems. There's always an expectation of getting paid for the stuff that they do in that fashion. So I decided I was going to publish, and I was going to give my know-how away for free. And
I remember talking to you about this, I'm sure, over the years, and I think I remember talking to you about this when you were going to do it. You must have taken some great advice about this business model.
No, we made it up as we went along.
You just...
Yeah, I mean, I published the first version of the Hong Kong Visa Handbook on the internet in 1996, when HSBC had only dial-up email accounts.
Cool.
So I knew that giving my expertise and know-how away for free would be successful. What I didn't realise was that, you know, fast forward, 12, 13, 14 years when we relaunched the Hong Kong Visa Handbook, I didn't realise the amplification factor of social media, and that you can have your content on the internet, but you can distribute it in an incredibly wide fashion, and you can reach into all the nooks and crannies of where people hang out with your content. And when immigration is one of those things, I don't have people hanging out waiting for my next blog post every day. When people have an immigration problem, they go to the internet to look for a solution. And if you publish frequently enough and often enough in a high quality way, and people will find their way onto your website, they realize you're not trying to sell them anything, you simply just want to help, and through that exposure you create a relationship.
You end up
a relationship. Yeah.
I spend
half my day, Phil, answering questions from strangers. You know, I talk to them for 2 or 3 minutes at a time, helping them understand what their challenges are, giving them advice. I don't have expectations.
Does that mean you've got you will at some stage you do, because it's a business, but the point is the quality that you've developed, your patience for getting the check, Is that what is? Are you more tenacious in your dealing with customers now?
No, I learned a long time ago that there are two types of customers from immigration service. There are those that don't want to pay and those that do want to pay. And those that don't want to pay used to be a liability because, you know, prior to 1996, I mean, I started in 1993,
right? That
was
a key time, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, prior to 1996, those people who didn't want to pay would take time away from you. They'd spend their hour in, you know, their hour-long free consultation, and you'd be no better off for it. They'd go off and do it by themselves. But now, those people that don't want to pay are an asset because they have access to your content. They talk about you. They tell their friends.
You haven't challenged them?
Absolutely not, no. So in that regard, they are a strategic asset rather than a liability. And those that do want to pay are really just a way of keeping score to tell you how well your business model is doing.
Right. So you're capitalizing on the fact that people will talk and repost and share and all that kind of stuff.
It's phishing, really, isn't it? Well, no, that's the normal human dynamic, right?
Yeah, well, that's what we do without Facebook. We do it anyway.
Exactly.
You talk to your mates in the pub. Hey, guess what? Steve Barnes knows what he's up to.
It's as simple
Next
as
thing
that.
You know, boom.
It's but, not
you know,
rocket science.
We're going to have to do part two of this because we're nearly out of time. But the cool thing was, you're talking about a very contemporary business model. But I'm so fascinated about how you would have done it in the mid to late 90s. You know, you didn't have all this stuff. Think of all the paper and visits.
We had the Hong Kong Visa Handbook. We had a website. And it made me in that time.
Ding, ding, ding. All that stuff. Well done, Steve. I mean, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. But that was really interesting. Steve Barnes is the Hong Kong Visa Geezer. You can find him anywhere on the internet. Take care, mate. And thanks for coming.